IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 37 of the Killing It, Podcast. So I'm Carl, and I'm joined today by Dave and Ryan. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, welcome.
So what are you all up to? Dave and I just got home.
And that's it. Punched out. No more business travel.
for the year, anyway.
At least for the year. And it actually doesn't look like I may have some availability come next year. So if you're, which makes me happy. I'm actually pretty zen with the fact that I might get some time at home and I just to get to rant on the radio.
So you flew about 5 hours from UK to Virginia?
I wish it was only five. It's more like it's more like 7.5, 8.
Okay. All right. And the temperature is the same. So I came from Hawaii to home. The temperature is about 25 degrees colder.
Yeah, you're struggling more than me. I was like, I get off the plane. It's like, oh, it's the same.
See, I've acclimated to the home weather after having been on the ground for an actual week. And like you, Dave, I'm at that point of, you know, you achieve that artificial milestone of the last business trip for the year until the 6th of January.
Right. It's an artificial one, but it's okay. It feels good to be looking at the year end. It's a nice bookend and you can say, yeah, I'm wrapping this year up.
And I'm doing, I think my first trip is the second week of January. So I do get to hang out a bit. So I'd have some pleasure for personal travel, but no business travel till then. So,
yeah. And I have no planes. All my personal travel involves car. Tour de families via car.
Yeah, I don't go anywhere with a car. So, all righty. So we have several fun topics today, but we want to remind people, please send us your questions, your comments, topics that you want us to discuss. We'd be happy to look at that. There's a form over at killingit.smallbizthoughts.com. And obviously tell all your friends to subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever else they can find us.
And this is a good time because we're with the holidays coming up, we're not anticipating doing the top 10 next year kind of garbage. So if you've got stuff you want us to dig into, this would be we'd love to take on a meaty topic.
Cool. All right. Well, I have a bit of a rant that's related to an article.
That was my fault that I started this.
You always know where we're headed when we start it with, I have a bit of a rant.
It's a bit of a rant. So I love using the example of Kodak as, you know, people who, a company that totally missed their opportunity, right? They literally invented the digital camera, put it on the shelf and sold film, doubled down on that. And I come from a background, many of you may not know this, but I worked at McClatchy, which is owned by McClatchy Newspaper. So I worked for a McClatchy company on the last real job I had. And working there, I think they had at the time 24 newspapers and us. So we were an electronic organization. We took political information and put it online so people could subscribe to it. And every day, the general manager and I received quotes for the cost of newsprint that day. But we didn't have any newsprint. We didn't buy it. We didn't sell it. They literally never understood our business. And when it came time for people to choose between the web and print, McClatchy literally said, this is our opportunity. All these newspapers are going on sale. We're going to buy them all up. And today, like literally within the last 2 weeks, they've sold off the building that they work out of and they are renting their own building and closing down, you know, everything. And so it literally is the case. You can't be like Kodak. So we'll put the link to the article in defense of Kodak. But at the end of the day, I think we have to stop trying to defend Kodak. Kodak really did do something stupid.
Well, so I don't disagree with you, but I liked the way this article broke it down because it actually talked about Kodak did miss the boat at some level, but there's a misunderstanding of kind of the why. The first, I'll summarize quickly. Like the first point the article makes is that it was a chemical company, not an images company. And they were in the chemical processing business. And then the second thought was, well, they could have been a brand. Well, you know, who just licenses a brand successfully? It's really, really hard to do. And then the third was, oh, they didn't invest in innovation. And the article points out, well, they did. They created OLEDs, but in the 90s. And so they were too early. And then everyone says, oh, but Kodak is gone. And it's like, well, actually, Eastman Chemical, the chemical portion of Kodak, is a $10 billion company employing 14,000 people. And so it really is a matter of perspective. I would agree, like they missed the boat when you say, like, if you view them as a picture images company, and did they get what was going to impact the bulk of their revenue in chemical processing? Yeah, they totally missed that. But there is some legitimacy to say, like, well, what standard are we judging them on?
Well, and it goes to a different level. I think in our industry, there's an unfortunate list of companies that fit that same kind of description, right? Once were dominant market leaders, now no longer even around or barely clinging on. And the question that we all have to ask is, well, what went wrong, right? You know, we all remember names like Digital and Wang, WordPerfect, even Novell, right? These were at one point in time dominant market share leaders who no longer are around. Very similar in the market implications for somebody like the brand Kodak in the photography world. But underneath the hood of each one of those, there's a fundamentally different reason why they went away, right? Like Novell had dominant market share, and then they lost it to Microsoft, not because of a technology question, not because they missed the boat on software development, but for a go-to-market strategy question, right? Like they went from a channel strategy back to a direct sales strategy at precisely the same time that Microsoft showed up and said, I got 200,000 resellers worldwide. We're going to be.
But see, Novell was in the right market and defined themselves in the right market. They lost the technology in a marketing battle.
Yep.
Kodak, I love to use the example that if you think that you are in a server business or an architecture business or an on-site service business, that's one thing. But if you think of yourself as being in a technology business, then you have a much brighter future. Because servers are going away and on-site technology is going away. And so you have to, Kodak didn't think of themselves as a film company or as a company that provided images, right? They thought of themselves the wrong way and ended up selling off their film division.
Right, exactly. But the chemical division went on.
Right. If they thought of themselves as an imaging company, they would probably have invested in the cameras.
and I think the implications for this, you, Mr. Local Solution Provider, running a small business, this is not just an academic conversation. The implications are, if somebody stopped you on the street today and said, what do you do? How would you answer? If the answer sounds anything at all like, well, these are the things that I sell, then you are volunteering to go down that dinosaur road. The stuff you sell will age out. The things that we get paid to deliver are not the point. We need to begin to define ourselves by who we serve and what problems we solve. In the Kodak example, I serve people who want to capture images of themselves and their kids and whatever and preserve them off into the future. It, with that kind of a definition, they would have abandoned an aging technology and adopted a new one. You, Mr. Solution Provider, if you say, I am a network management specialist, I am a storage, I am a managed service provider, cool for today, for as long as that market is vibrant and thriving. But as soon as that one inevitably commoditizes, because they all will, if you're defined by yesterday's technology, you are yesterday's provider.
Right.
The only way to avoid that is define yourself as your customer and the problems you solve.
And let me highlight a modern example of defining yourself badly. Anybody watching WeWork? Like WeWork defined them, thought they were a technology company. They aren't. They're a real estate company. And when it came out in the S-1 filings, it all imploded because they're a real estate company. And then the other one I'm gonna pick on for a moment is everyone likes to talk about, oh, Uber has disrupted the taxi industry. But I'm going to make two quick observations about Uber. The first is they aren't profitable. They aren't actually making any money. They are subsidizing rides. They are transferring money around in order to subsidize rides. And then the second piece is, by the way, they're also kind of in some trouble. They're suspended in London, effective in another week or two, for not actually obeying the law. So now they'll appeal and they'll go another round of that. But you look at Uber and you're like, oh, they totally disrupted the taxi market. Well, have they? Have they truly sustainably?
We should do a totally different subject on this, so write this down. But when I was in Hawaii, I said, hey, they don't have all these stupid scooters littering the sidewalk. And the Lyft driver there was saying, well, they tried to bring them in, but unlike with the disruption from Uber and Lyft, what happened with the scooters, they looked at other cities and they saw it coming and they made it illegal.
Right. Well,
when they showed up on all these scooters, the city brought big dump trucks and threw them in the dump trucks and took them all away.
Yeah, and it's illegal in a bunch of European cities. Scooters are not in London. They're not in Paris. They're in Paris, but they're not in London. They're not in Dublin. They're not in a bunch of European cities because it's illegal. And so, that's an interesting piece to go. You can't just willy-nilly disrupt things. There are actually
parameters. That was Uber's disruption, was just do it, and then they'll change the laws to make it fit. And I do have to say, the thing that people forget about is that the innovation comes from people. Technology is not innovation. So Kodak can invent a technology, but if they don't use it to innovate anything, then it sits on the shelf.
And if they don't, to borrow terminology from the Innovator's Solution book that we keep recommending everybody goes back to college and reads that book. If you don't hire that technology to do a job, if there's no functional purpose for why you have that new technology, I mean, cool that you got new technology, that's nifty, but that just sits on the back of a data sheet somewhere. It doesn't get adopted until it solves a problem for a person who has money and is willing to pay you to solve that problem. So I think that's my main takeaway. I read that Kodak article, and like you, Dave, I saw some justification in there on the chemical business, but it brings back this thing. If you insist on calling yourself a managed service provider because what you do is provide managed services, I mean, that's logically accurate, but that is existentially doomed. You just can't keep calling yourself the thing you sell. You have to call yourself the people you serve and the problems you solve. And by the way, the tools you use to solve those problems, they'll change. I mean, that's why we are in this business, because innovation continues to happen. But boy, please define yourself as your customer.
I'm predicting big change in the tool market, but I'll just tease on that.
All right. So thank you for all that. Topic number two, Ryan, I think this one you brought up about reality. Reality is my favorite thing.
Yeah. See, so reality is no longer sufficient. It is now reality 4.0, right? So to take us out of our IT world and into the emerging world of what the pundits are referring to as industry 4.0. By the way, if you guys are not familiar with that topic, do a Google search. You'll find a phenomenal amount of writing and really advanced thinking on this topic. The next wave of intelligent manufacturing and then device lifecycle management. It is something that has been not under the surface. It's been a very big and aggressive development topic for about a decade now. And industrial economies are full scale adopting this kind of a technological enhanced approach. In fact, if you go to Germany, the federal government has instituted a standard based on Industry 4.0 and what they will expect the next wave of manufacturing to be. And they will subsidize certain things. They will invest with companies that meet these standards and stop investing in companies that don't meet these standards. It's it's fascinating, but it lives just one degree outside the typical domain of an IT channel company. I want to make sure we're all paying attention to this. The article that we will link to in the show notes is actually taking it out of just that there is this thing called Industry 4.0 and taking it to the next level of, okay, what would you use it for? And they're focused on the idea of enhanced reality, right? Augmented reality, artificial intelligence, all of these technologies, right? Picture yourself with an Oculus Rift on your face and what's going on inside of that environment. The application list that they go through for industry, for healthcare, for autonomous vehicles, for field service providers, the application list is getting very real and tangible. And while I find those to be just absolutely magnetic and fascinating, the next immediate thought that I have is, oh, if I'm a managed service provider, if I sell storage infrastructure, or if my business is built on selling and installing network switches, wow, I really need to know what the traffic that's going to be flowing over that infrastructure is about to be and be able to build systems that will accommodate these advanced applications. Your customers are going to come to you and say, I have a fascinating new thing that I want to do with enhanced or augmented reality for field service applications. It will drive immediate business benefits, and you do not want to be the one who says, yeah, that's a nice idea, Mr. Business Customer, but I'm sorry, your network doesn't have the bandwidth to host all of that stuff, so we're going to prevent you from innovating on that side of your operation. So this is fascinating stuff, and boy, we got to get ready for it.
So AR and VR is interesting to me because there's a weirdness to the tech in terms of the way people like adopt it. And what I mean by that is oftentimes like there's always kind of technology comes in from the enterprise and it comes in from the consumer, right? That tends to be how a lot of tech comes in. This is interesting because the enterprise is looking at it, but I think it's getting totally rejected by the consumer. And I can sum it up in a really simple kind of way. If the tech makes you look like a dork or it like lowers your capability of like being attractive to finding a mate, then I think, you know, like this is seriously a hindrance to adoption. Why is VR not and AR like not taken off? Because you look like an idiot using it in commercial spaces.
So why did Google Glass fail, other than the fact that people thought it was creepy that you might be videotaping?
Well, because
well, other than that fact.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of oversimplifying, but I actually think there's something to this. If using the technology makes you look like a repellent socially, like it does have real struggles getting in. So for me, this is one of those spaces where it's like, okay, I'm really intrigued by the idea of it being used in manufacturing and like high end, like in goggles and in high end kind of stuff. But until they figure out a way for it to be consumer, we're not going to see a lot of broadband adoption, not broadband speed. But what I'm also intrigued about is like I'm not going to see a lot of small business, medium-sized business adoption unless it's these specialized areas.
So, you know, I recently rented a couple of different cars when we were on this vacation, right? And they all these new cars, especially the expensive ones, make all kinds of noises and lights go off and it beeps when you're too far to the right or the left or out of the lane, or people sneak up on you, or you're going too fast for the car in front of you. All of that, because I didn't own any of these cars. I didn't know what was beeping or where I needed to look. And by the time I looked, the light was going off. So whatever it was trying to tell me was wrong. And I was thinking, what I really need is a small little screen that goes the width of the window that is always in my point of view. And I don't have to look at it. It is literally like right there as an overview. And it would be like, instead of having goggles, I would have this screen in front of me, you know, like an upfront display. I don't have to look at the you know, somewhere between the speedometer and the gas gauge to know what it's trying to tell me. Right. So yep. I think it can be done, but you know, you're right. I want it to look cool in the car. I'm why I'm driving around with the goggles on. That's a different story.
Yeah, that's a whole different safety issue. The larger picture here, and you're getting right to the heart of it, Dave. The technology's first application was entertainment consumer individual applications, right? Those have social implications, technological implications, can't see my hands, so I feel airsick implications, right? There's all kinds of challenges with that. But when you take it out of the consumer entertainment and you prove the business case in an industrial application, right? One of the ones I keep going back to, right? If you are an aircraft engine mechanic, in order to get that certification, there's years of education, there's training, hands-on, you need to do all of this stuff. That human who is an aircraft engine maintenance tech is a very expensive entity, right? They have been invested with a lot of knowledge and skill. Or I could put a person with basic mechanical skills out there in the field and a set of non-dorky looking VR goggles that will overlay, not replace the reality, but overlay with augmented reality, a schematic of the engine that I'm looking at, and it will identify the part that is in question that needs service. It will outline it, highlight it, make it blink, and say, that's the thing you need to do. Now I can bring an aircraft engine mechanic up to speed in 1/10 of the training time for 1/10 of the cost, and yet still get enhanced quality and service outcomes because the technology improves the human capability. By the way, that set of VR goggles, it has an IP address, it has a sensor, it's connected to your network. And if you, Mr. Technology Service Provider, do not actually monitor and manage that endpoint, that is where you will take the off-ramp from what's cool and what's now for the customer into, you know, you just deal with the plumbing. We're going to talk to more modern providers about what's really driving our
right. Well, remember, my little rule only applies to consumer. I mean, you can, I mean, for the same reason that's why people wear hard hats on, you know, job sites, and they can wear, right, because in those contexts, it's the rules are different. When you're looking for a mass market adoption, then these rules, you know, this simplistic rule of like you must look slightly cool matters because of the way that you'll see it in commonplace. So I just want to differentiate because I am with you. Like, this is really interesting, and I'm just trying to figure out, and I don't have a great answer to this, is how long till it gets across more industries. Right now you're seeing it in these very, you're a great example, right? But you need to be at a certain level of investment to make it happen. I think this is interesting to watch. I think there's solution providers that are going to take advantage of it. And I'm just trying to figure out how widespread, how fast.
Well, we need to move to another topic, but I got to say, I think Disney's your answer because I think that they will start using this in their theme parks. You will interact with things, it'll be okay, and then you'll see lots of other people who are very happy wearing goggles.
Perhaps. We'll see if they move the needle, it'll be interesting.
So, but yeah, it's got to, you know, you have to have little steps along the way, but it has to be socially acceptable at some point.
Right.
All right, topic number three, is IoT actually cutting anybody's costs?
Well, so this is an interesting one. You know, Ryan found an article, and it's from a site, Tech Eris, that I wasn't familiar with. And I dug into it. It's an independent press kind of medium site, and what they specialize is trying to take technologies and make it accessible to an average user. And it's a great litmus test then if there's on a site that is saying like, if you're presenting these concepts for some kind of broader acceptance, then it's interesting. And they were breaking down and answering the question of, you know, how does IoT cut costs for an office? And they bring up some interesting examples around improving inventory management, around safety compliance, around energy expenses, security and labor costs. And I thought they were pretty tangible examples that were something real. I actually went further and looked for IoT on the Gartner hype cycle, and it's now off of it. Interestingly, right. If you look at it from the 19, you know, the 19 version of it, it is matured enough that it is no longer on the hype cycle. That should tell us something.
So we're talking about this on one of the CompTIA boards. And the question is, if it then becomes in wide adoption and now it's a trend? Does it get back on the cycle? And then we're like, okay, so do you want to eliminate and then recreate boards based on whether or not something is listed with Gartner, you know? But it's interesting to track something like this because where it's most visible is literally in hotels. In the last 2 years, we've gone from having no hotels that had LEDs to now there are places where entire hallways are unlit if nobody's there. And that's pretty cool. And, you know, they're more and more going to be replacing all of those again with IoT. Because right now they have LED, but it's not necessarily connected to a network. So the next step is to save even more money. There's also, especially on the commercial side, anything where you have people coming and going and leaving, you have the ability to save massive amounts of money on HVAC as well as lighting. So it's a cool combination of technologies.
And see, this is exactly where our conversation, hopefully for those who are listening in, you catch kind of this thread that we're trying to do. When we say killing it, what we mean fundamentally is we can't just stick with the old way of doing things. You have to be aware of the new technologies that are coming down the pipe and be prepared when they achieve that customer implementation status and you are now going to get paid for monitoring and managing these things. This is a technology, it's a perfect example, right? 3-4 years ago, you said IoT and everybody in the room rolled their eyes and went, Star Trek, whatever, it's off in the future. Today, it's no longer on the hype cycle because it's in real implementations in actual hotels. But what that means is you now cannot explain it to the decision maker who is going to make the buying decision in technical terms, because that human is not a technologist by trade, right? That person who owns the operational side of a hotel, they understand HVAC, they understand lighting, they understand security systems, facilities, physical administration, and you have to be able to go to them and say, by the way, I need you to do your job completely differently in order to get the following tangible benefits. Well, if those benefits are based on the silicon that we are putting onto a chip and the integration of API architectures, that person will politely invite you to leave their office. You don't get a conversation by selling technology to non-technologists based on your expertise.
Well, I think one of the benefits that we have is that people are inviting Alexa and you know, they're inviting smart devices into their house. And so they're getting the fact that, oh, I can be over here and my lights can come on and my heat can come on. And, you know, it's all ready for me when I get home at 6 o'clock. And so they're doing that on their own. And so when you come to them and say, let me help you in your office, you know, because we have things that will tell us, like, do you really need to use all that toner? Do you really need this? Do you, you know, we can tell them this is kind of like what you're doing at home, except we've got the next level. And, but we have to figure out in the small business space, how do you save clients money? Because at the end of the day, if it's just fun, cool, whiz bang, there's no savings.
So let me throw this out then. I declare a Supreme Court of technology among here, and I'm going to make a bold declaration. I think IoT is not emerging, and I think it is mainstream, and I think it is ready for prime time. Anybody want to challenge that? I mean, I think we could say it's here, it's done, it's rolling out.
I will absolutely agree with that.
Yes, I agree. We'll make it unanimous, and then we get the rooms.
And by the way, Dave, count in your own world. How many years ago was it you were at a conference? I remember you and I having a conversation where you were at a conference and you said, IoT's coming down the pipe. And somebody replied, well, that's just a pipe dream. Nobody in the world of technology channel is ever going to do that. What was that, 6 years ago? Somebody said that was a pipe dream. You'll never actually do that. If you don't pay attention to IoT now, you're going to get...
Well, and this, you know, sometimes we think of the end users as being, you know, not quite up to speed on our technology. But if you look at the complexity of some of the stuff they manage at home with IoT, I mean, even earbuds, right? You can get an app on your phone that will tell you how charged your left and your right earbud is, whether they're in the charger, whether they're charging now or discharging.
Right.
there's like seven things going on with two little things you put in your ear, and people understand it. Right? There's nothing about it that overwhelms them, you know, so design matters. But, you know, people will step up if it makes a difference in their business.
So this is really, I mean, if we agree and we sort of talk about all this right now, like the three of us have just declared that this is a mainstream technology.
So we can never talk about it again.
Well, I think I want to, you know, challenge listeners, like that's a different shift, because we've been talking about this in the emerging bucket for so long. Like what we're saying here is no, guys, it's not. It's here. It's mainstream. It's to be expected. Customers are talking about it. This is just as boring in some ways as email. Like, I mean, well, I use an extreme example, but it's intentional.
Well, right. And I mean, it takes us to that next level of what we have always had the conversation centered around, that the technology is here is good. What can you do about it as an individual player in the technology industry? It moves it beyond, are you trained and certified for the development, the integration and the management of a sophisticated technology? And it takes it squarely into the conversation of, hey, do you know how to sell this stuff, and can you price it, and can you actually make this part of a package of services that you deliver to your customers? Because by the way, if you come to me and you say, I can show you how to increase revenue, decrease energy cost, and improve labor productivity, as a business owner, I don't care if you're selling me IoT or Casual Dress Friday. I'm interested because those are the outcomes I'm trying to get. Our job now is to move this out of the theoretical conversation of whiz-bang technology and into, could you put some numbers to that?
So the theme of the day turns out to be, you've got to solve a problem.
Yeah.
Well, you got to solve a problem, and you better know how to sell.
Exactly. And sadly, we're out of time. So thank you for being here, and we will see you next week. This has been episode 37 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.